Travel and dining have always gone hand in hand. Historically, most travelers will book their destination first, and then you figure out where you want to eat, secure that reservation second. But with the rise in popularity of international food lists, the rise of the Michelin star rating system, the accessibility of the world's 50 best restaurants, and social media overall giving so many more people insight onto what's going on in these other culinary destinations, we're seeing travelers start to actually build their itineraries around a specific reservation. Not only domestically, like we historically would see with someone trying to get a reservation at the French Laundry, but we're seeing people build this around internationally. Now, I was skeptical at first, even as someone who was a significant planner, would people really build international itineraries around a reservation first? Is Paris still a king of culinary tourism? I wanted to have my friend Wayne Conti on, CEO of Aspire America's leading lifestyle hospitality concierge service, to help us learn further and figure out what the data says about culinary tourism. You feel alive, let's hit the dance floor. Don't work too hard, my break a backbone. Return of the Mac, the king is back though. Corvette and cash, I never lack those. Shimmy, shimmy, yeah, I got the semi-fold weight. Don't step out the line like this a probate. You hit the line and try to locate. This for the time, got time for no day war. Welcome to the Crow Knows Podcast. This is going to be a fun one today, combining a couple of my favorite topics, travel and food. I am joined by Wayne Conti, CEO of Aspire Americas. Wayne, thanks for coming on the show. How you doing?
Good, AJ. Thank you for having me on today.
Awesome. Excited to talk about this. But first, before we get into this and really start diving deep, tell us a little bit about you. What you do at Aspire, what Aspire does, and a lot of people are probably familiar with what you do, but not necessarily that they're interacting with you. So walk us through that.
Sure thing, AJ. So my name is Wayne Conti. I'm the CEO of Aspire Lifestyle Americas. I've been with Aspire since 2016. We've actually been in business for over 35 years. We're the largest global concierge provider. We do about 3 million requests. We have 23 offices in 19 countries. And when we talk about requests, AJ, we're looking at, as you talked about your two topics when you joined, travel, which typically is airline bookings, hotels. We do a lot of dining reservations are one of our top requests. We may help somebody with searching for a Rolex watch as an example. And our clients tend to be, we're a B2B provider, which simply means we're white label. We sit behind some of the largest financial brands around the world. So it could be a large credit card company where consumers are coming on and they're spending and the card providers are looking to provide a service. It could be wealth management companies where they have assets under management. It could be in the travel space, hospitality. It could be a large hotel brand or an automobile manufacturer. And we actually provide our services, our concierge services, also in the employer market. So as employees have started returning to office, we're able to provide concierge services that help create savings of time for them.
Got it. You were the one of the first people that I thought of because I really wanted to get in. I've been super fascinated by how travel's evolved. And I know that you guys are very involved with World's Best Restaurants and all that stuff, not only, you know, nationwide, but globally. And it seems like obviously coming out of COVID, things have really shifted. And there's been this real big push towards what I call experiential tourism and especially culinary tourism. I think Research and Markets has it at like $806 billion in spend coming on there. And with what you guys do, you'd be the first person, the best person to talk about that. Talk to us a little bit about what you're seeing, you know, what your clients are looking for, how they're looking at travel around dining and those kinds of experiences rather than, you know, building an itinerary and then going and finding dining reservations.
Sure. Love to take you through that. And if you just go back a few years during COVID, restaurants were basically closed in many large cities. People weren't traveling. They were staying home. You had food delivery coming. Their spending habits were very different. They were spending on, gym equipment in the house, you know, subscriptions to the house, purchasing assets. Once COVID ended, you saw this, and the number you gave is exactly the number we have. Spend is tremendous, and there's been this sharp increase in travel spend. And you're seeing, because dining, people were eating at home, there's been an acceleration of people that want to go out and create experiences while they travel. And so what's interesting is, in the past, people would typically book their airfare first, then they'd book their hotel, and then they'd have their dates, and they'd call us up and they say, hey, I'm going to be in Miami for 4 days, and I'd love to, I'd like to get some restaurant reservations. What we're seeing now in many cases is, as a consumer, that books the restaurant first. So they want to get into one of the highly touted restaurants in, say, Paris. And they, once they get that restaurant reservation, they're now going and booking the airline and the hotel second. So consumers are really looking for an overall immersive experience. So when you look at global culinary experiences, you're looking at, you know, hand-selected local hosts, private homes, exclusive venues where people can go eat. I recently did a cooking class in Barcelona. I failed miserably at making my paella, but yeah, there's a lot of fun things. And so when you talk about that immersive experience, it's different for everybody. I mean, it could be as little as, you know, creating a taco tasting in a city and going to some of the local restaurants, or in Little Havana, you know, going and checking out some of the coffee. What's in common, though, is, you know, our hosts have a passion for bringing people together, and that's bringing people together through food.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think, at least for me, I used to think about those guided tours is a little bit of a little bit hokey, a little bit, you know, not super authentic. And it seems like it was normally something that if you wanted a really good one would be on the real high end. It would cost a lot of money. But it seems like not only the tours themselves, those walking tours of the cities and things like that, but it also seems that people are more open to the group tours, where people aren't really looking as private as it was, or was it just some, you know, it was something you usually would just get on TripAdvisor or something like that. But is that what you guys are seeing, that people are more open to not only the experiences of the food itself, but also with being comfortable being around other people?
Yes, it's part of that group experience, right? Whether you're sitting with strangers at an exclusive venue where they bring two of the top 50 chefs in and do a wine tasting, or that example I gave you with Barcelona with the paella, the first thing we did as a group is we went to a local market and bought the fresh foods, then brought it back to cook. So it wasn't just you go in and all the ingredients are there. We actually went, we picked out the ingredients along the walk, you know, as they're giving us a tour of the city. You're talking to everybody in the group. So it's really become a passionate group among people who have similar interests.
Yeah, you give me all the feels inside. I studied abroad in Barcelona back in college. It's my favorite city in the world. I think it's one of the most unique. I loved it. I figured it was going to be a paella thing. We did that in Tokyo. My wife and I went. We did a sushi making class, things like that. It's interesting that you mentioned going to the market. Is that something you guys have seen it seems like that's more of a part of it, where it's not just people that just want the end product, like they want the full on experience of creating it. Is that something that's new, or have you guys been seeing that for a while now?
It's something we've just seen new. And I think part of it started again, during COVID. You had some of the top restaurants in the world were actually having orders to go. And some of the top chefs were, and we were doing this through our concierge services, top chefs would send the food actually to your house. And so it wasn't a group experience, but it was an individual experience with a group of people coming in through a Zoom call, like, you know, like you, yeah, and I are doing today.
Yeah.
And the ingredients are there, and everybody, you know, sets the ingredients on the table and they cook at the same time. So that experience of really doing everything from the beginning, you know, and you're seeing that with hyper-local scenes too, with restaurants, is really taking hold. And people just enjoy the experience, not just sitting at a table. In fact, to some tables, they'll actually cook the meal right in front of you. It's part of the whole experience.
Yeah, it's good. Obviously, the rise of, you know, not only the Food Network, but also now that all these streaming services have put together these really, really impressive shows. I know Netflix has been a big one on that, and they're phenomenal. Production value is incredible, but they're really cool, bringing all these people together. So there's a lot more awareness there. I think in the past, a lot of people that may, when they think about culinary tourism and things like that, they'll think about, you know, French Laundry, for instance, in the U.S. Are you guys seeing anything? Are those still the dominant, you know, those national names, the well-known or international names? Are those still dominating what people are looking for? Are people starting to say, hey, you know, we've heard about the French Laundry. We've heard about, you know, these restaurants that are the three Michelin star restaurants, but we'd like to get something that's a little more off the beaten path. What are you guys seeing for that?
That's a great question, because you got two extremes, right? The two ends of the barbell. You have, you know, restaurants that you can go on a local table and book on your own. Then on the very high end, you have things like 11 Madison, Noma, French Laundry, really high-end restaurants that you really do need, you know, help from a concierge to help get into the restaurant. And then what you're seeing as people are traveling is they're calling us and they're saying they're looking for those hidden gems. They're looking for something that you wouldn't normally see. And part of, you know, if you look at all the YouTubes and talks, is you have a lot of people in these local communities that are also out there giving recommendations. So one of the things we do with, you know, we have a team of about 900 frontline concierge that are specialists in dining. We speak 30 languages, not me individually. I speak one and a half. But, you know, if you're traveling to Japan, I'll use Japan as an example. You're traveling from New York to Tokyo and you want to get into Den, which is one of the top 10 restaurants. It's really hard if you're calling from the US and you're trying to get into,
yeah,
you know, a restaurant with 12 tables. But if you're able to reach out, we have an office right there in Tokyo and we can reach out. They're one of our top, you know, one of the top 50 restaurants as part of the world's 50 best. And that helps because you have the local language and the knowledge and you can figure out how to get the best chance to get that person, you know, an exclusive invite into that restaurant.
Yeah. You mentioned that barbell and those extremes. Dining nowadays, my wife and I consider it's our sport. It's basically our only hobby. It's what we love doing, but it's incredible that now it's becoming so expensive in almost every city. Whereas, you know, a lot of times I think in the past we would think, hey, we'll go splurge when we travel. But nowadays, you know, I live in Dallas here. It's almost impossible to go out for two people and spend less than $100. And so the thought of if we're doing that all the time, there was traditionally, you know, a bill that you would save for a travel event or something like that. It's a little more difficult when you're spending the money to travel and also spend $400, $500, $600 or up to $1,000, like a lot of these tasting menu type restaurants were. What are you guys seeing from spending habits from clients? Are they still looking for that really high-end experience when they travel? Or are they starting to say, hey, I want something good, but would like it to be a little more budget side because the cost of the trip is so high?
Yeah, we have also our customers range, and you know, we go from the ultra high net worth to mass golf course, where, you know, people are looking for savings and they really want a unique experience. So they want the local tasting, but not at a, you know, over the top price. And then you also have people that they'll spend their money. They'd rather save on the airfare. They may fly coach because when they get to Europe, they want to go and have that experience. And you're absolutely right. The prices at some of the really high end restaurants continue to go up. And it's I liken it to the Taylor Swift recent tour, right? People were willing to spend $2,000-$3,000,
yeah,
for a ticket to see her concert because it was an experience that they'll remember forever. And I think the same thing is applying here to some of these dining experiences and even wellness trips, where people are saying, you know, I'm going to spend money because I've been sitting home for 2 years and I'm going to splurge on myself or splurge on my family. We're seeing a lot of multi-general trips where families weren't even getting together for a period of time. And now they're going with their grandparents and their kids, you know, and they're building it out around this experience, of which dining is a piece of it. So, and I think if you were to ask a lot of credit card companies, they'd say that their spend is still pretty strong, even though there's, you know, a little bit of a recession that potentially could hit this year. The spend on some of these experiences, and probably same thing with certain assets, luxury goods, is you're seeing a lot of spend. So I think that'll continue to evolve this year. And I think the restaurants are still in a really good position.
You mentioned wellness trips, which is another thing that I really wanted to hit on. That's definitely seen a big emergence. That I think historically, when we think about travel and trips, especially big ones, a lot of it was around eating and drinking. And now it seems like we're starting to see a shift, especially in the high-end premium space, where people are looking for these wellness trips where it's not, you know, let's go and rage and, you know, and do wine tastings and all that kind of stuff. It's, hey, I want to go detox. I want to get rid of, you know, get away from the drinking and stuff, and emergence of healthy lifestyle trips, things like that. Is that something that you guys are seeing all over? the world, or is that something you're exclusively seeing more in the U.S.? What does that look like?
So I think it's two-pronged. One is you're seeing people that specifically will plan a trip around wellness. They'll go to a spa for a week that focuses on yoga and massage and certain nutritional aspects. And so it's a full week that's set for that. And then you're also seeing people who are traveling, and while they're going to their best, their favorite restaurants and going on some of the high-end tours, they also want to, you know, do a spa day. You know, I think there's a lot of people who are looking to, you know, live longer, and they want to live healthier. And I think these wellness people are willing to spend on that. And so it's a trend that we've seen, and we believe that spend on the credit card and as people's budgets, they'll continue to allot money to the wellness area.
Yeah, we just came off of a trip for my mom's birthday, went down to Lake Austin Spa Resort, which is great. It's all health wellness focused. It's classes, it's exercise. It's right there on the lake. It's a lot easier to come back feeling refreshed. People probably don't feel that, like, hey, I got to come back and need a vacation from the vacation kind of thing. Go back to the food, because it's always interesting seeing how those trends go. It was, you know, obviously Paris is kind of the mecca for a while on food. It seems like from looking at the rankings, there's been a big shift towards some of the Nordic countries. And so what are you guys seeing for food and that culinary travel focus? Are you guys seeing pattern shift in where people are going? Or is it still, hey, I'm going on a trip, I'm still going to the traditional powers?
So we are seeing other cities start to take hold. One of the things at Aspire Lifestyles we use, we're one of the sponsors for the world's 50 best restaurants. This past year, it was at Valencia. It'll actually be in the U.S. for the first time in many years. It'll be in Las Vegas this coming June. So maybe you can make it out to Las Vegas. And it's like the Academy Awards for restaurants. And they'll count down from the top 100, and then they go through the top 50. You have seen some cities, you know, Copenhagen, to your question, Paris was a traditional hotspot, and it still is. But there's other cities, and I would say Copenhagen is certainly one of them in Europe. Lisbon, a lot of people are increasing their travel into Europe, going into Portugal. When you look at South America, Mexico City and São Paulo have typically been powerhouse cities for dining, but the top restaurant in the world is Central in Lima, Peru. So Lima, Peru has become quite a hotspot. You go over to Asia, you know, Tokyo has always been a great destination for dining, but you know, now you're seeing, you know, Singapore is really picking up. So I'd say a lot of cities are growing. And then even, you know, if you look at the local, you know, the farm to table scene here in the U.S., some smaller cities I'll bring up, like a Des Moines, Iowa, a Portland, Maine, an Albuquerque, New Mexico, a Virginia Beach, Virginia, Salt Lake City, right? As you look at this hyper-local dining, we're really, you know, providing fresh product and really looking at the purveyors around the restaurant, you're starting to see some of those cities pick up as well. So it's really an interesting trend that we've seen over the last few years.
Yeah, the other thing I've always been keeping an eye on, you know, so living in Dallas, Michelin doesn't come to Texas. And it seems like a lot of, you know, Nashville saw, which I know you're in there, huge growth there, Charleston, Atlanta, a lot of those cities. And they all seem to have that same farm to table real focus. There are a lot of similar kind of dining there. What are you guys seeing from a trend standpoint, if anything, from the types of restaurants that are emerging in that 50 best? I guess I know there's trends from traditional French techniques, but now things look like, it seems like, a little more approachable food than in the past when it was reserved for the real, you know, white tablecloth kind of things. What does that look like for your customers?
I think it's just there's a tremendous breadth of food offerings, combinations, you know, a combination of Peruvian and Asian, right? That, you know, that combination has become very popular. When you look at sustenance and restaurants really growing the food around the area, sometimes they control the whole supply chain. So everything from the beer to the salad, everything is produced right there. So sometimes it's not that, you know, the white cloth table with the high-end service. It could be, you know, local ingredients in a community, really fresh food. It could be a really simple meal. But you're starting to see the palate and the taste for people really change because they're looking for those different experiences. And some are looking for a 3-hour sit down, 8-course. Some people are. Others just want to go into a local community. It could be in, you know, Bogota, Colombia, right? Restaurant Leo, the chef there's the top female chef in the world. You know, the produce, everything that's cooked comes from the local community. So I think we'll continue to see a divergence where people, when, as we talked earlier about the experiential piece of it, is they're looking for different types of dining experiences.
That makes sense. All this also leaves me with wondering, where does this leave hotels? Right. Obviously, hotels, a big part of what they bank on is getting the on-site dining, not only for the guests that are there, but also people in the community. I think a lot of times people don't want to go to a restaurant that's in a hotel for whatever reason. They think it's not going to be as good, or it's a little tourist trap, whatever it is. Like, what do you guys, what does it look like for hotels? Are they able to keep up? Are people still open to dining in the hotels? Where does that leave hotels?
Yeah, that's a great question. If you look at Las Vegas, right, part of the restaurant scene, most of those high-end restaurants are actually sitting in the hotels. But I think the hotels have really done an excellent job of offering experiences when you're staying. And I agree with you, AJ. When I used to travel a lot more than I do now, it would be you'd go to the hotel, you'd check your bag, and you'd get in a, or you'd rent a car, get a rental car now as an Uber, and you go to the restaurant outside the hotel. You're seeing a lot more choices, both from a spa, which we talked about earlier. The restaurant scene has really accelerated. An example I'll give you is we're working with Waldorf Astoria in Cabo they're bringing in some of the top chefs. They do a dining series where they actually bring the chefs to the hotel. They do cooking classes. They'll have, I think coming in April, they'll have the top chef from Mito is going to be coming in. And so those things have really brought people to the hotels because they're creating a weekend and, again, an experience around dining and capturing that when you're staying at the hotel. So I think the hotels have realized that that's the trend. You'll see concierge services at a lot of the hotels in the big cities have relationships with some of the restaurants. So they're able to support areas that maybe Aspire doesn't do before a trip. And when you're staying at the hotel, if you need to make changes or reach out to a local restaurant, those hotels are much better than they were, let's say, 5-10 years ago. They really are acclimated with the trends that are going on.
I've always wondered that, how when you reach out and ask for the concierge to get you hooked up at a restaurant, how much sway does that really have? It's good to hear. It's definitely better off. And I've noticed that too. A lot of times when I'm either going to stay at a hotel, or have a trip upcoming, I'll see that they've got a chef series coming in or a visiting chef or whatever it may be. And those are always, it's interesting because I always wonder, well, I don't necessarily know that person. And so is that going to change my experience of what I would get in that specific space? But that's probably me needing to do a better job of doing the research there on it. But I know, yeah, Vegas is obviously, it's synonymous with, hotel and restaurants alike. I wanted to think about how these hotels, restaurants, how they're actually engaging the clients and getting people there. How should hospitality businesses be looking at leveraging this, this trend, this emergence of this culinary experiential tourism?
So it's a good question. I think the the digital platforms are accelerating, right? So whether you're Seven Rooms or your Open Table or your Resy or your Tock, you have these similar types of companies in Asia as well. You don't want to lose that personal touch. Like, I always enjoy, if I'm calling a restaurant, the experience starts with the time the person picks up the phone.
Yeah.
Right. So there are times where I prefer having a digital experience where I can go in and book it. There's other times where I may have, one of my daughters may have, a nutrition, a restriction that I need to make sure that they're aware of. And I think, the restaurants have to be careful, just like the hotels. You don't want to lose that immersive experience by becoming too impersonal. So, it's great if they can, get a digital booking, but they also need to make themselves available. And that's where at Aspire, we try to be kind of a go-between, because we can actually reach out to the restaurant. We can start that kind of experience with the card member that's looking to go to the restaurant. you know, but that it's really important, you know, because, you know, if I need to make changes to a reservation, if I'm changing the number of people, if I'm late to the restaurant and change, sometimes you're like, oh, where's that email from that digital supplier, right? And then you're, you know, you feel like you're out of touch and you're not going to get your reservation. So I think it's important that we still keep the human element on this whole thing. And I brought up the dietary one before. We had a card member that called up, and the lady wanted to speak with each chef at the restaurant to make sure that the food being delivered to her child was, you know, had all the precautions in it. And she wouldn't even take the answer from the restaurant, needed to talk to a chef. And the chef was happy to get on.
Wow.
So it's important with the whole culinary experience that we don't lose that that touch right from the beginning when that call is made. And, you know, when they arrive at the restaurant, everybody's part of that whole experience from the time they walk into the restaurant to the time they sit. If it's a chef tour in the kitchen or they're bringing the food out to the table, right? In a way, they're all actors in a play and trying to create a great experience for everybody.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I don't know if you watched The Bear on Hulu, but it was an incredible real kind of peek behind the curtain on how those restaurants, those true top of the line restaurants, really pay attention to every single little thing, whether it's doing research on the clients before they show up. That might have also painted a little bit of an unrealistic expectation for people going there, but it does seem like, I think a lot of the perception is those restaurants are really stuffy, and they almost treat you like you're lucky to be there versus the other way around. But it sounds like that's not the case in a lot of those real high-end ones. Is that what you've seen as well?
Yes. Those experiences still exist where I walk in and I feel like I'm lucky to have been able to walk through the front door. I'd say for the most part, I find most of the top chefs are very humble. They really support each other. When we're at this World's 50 Best, they all know each other. They're hugging on stage. They're bringing up their country flag because they're proud of, you know, what they're doing. And I find they're excited when somebody comes in and is partaking in what they're doing. To the point, you know, when we talk about trends going on in restaurants, nowadays it's becoming like hotels and airlines where you have to, in some parts, you have to prepay for the dining reservation, because it may be a restaurant that only has 8 tables. And more important than the restaurant actually getting the money is if one couple or foursome doesn't show up at that restaurant and there's only 7, well, that restaurant went out and bought food for 8 tables. And part of the, you know, the great experience of sitting there is that there are 8 tables that everybody's there at the same time. And if you have 1 or 2 tables missing, it's a distraction for the restaurant. And so I find most of the restaurants go out of their way to really, you know, get as many people in. I mean, you know, one of the struggles with restaurants is if you look at airlines, you can add more planes on a route from New York to LA if travel's picking up. If you're looking at, you know, a restaurant in Manhattan and it has 20 tables, maybe they're able to add a few tables outside, but it's really hard to go from 20 tables to 40 tables. So you tend to have more people now searching for that same number of tables or a slightly incremental one. So companies like ourselves really have to work harder. Restaurants have to work harder not to frustrate people when they're trying to get into a restaurant that they've been trying to get into for 6 months. And so I think, you know, as we look 6 months or years, we'll continue to find better ways to make sure that we're able to spread these reservations out, you know, across the gamut.
That's such a huge piece. And I wanted to hit on that because you mentioned Talk and Open Table and Resy and all these different platforms. For us, I think, that aren't in the business and don't understand this stuff, it seems like it's all the same to us. I know restaurants go back and forth, but there's two things I wanted to hit on. One is, you know, what the difference is. I assume there's some cost on the restaurant side, but the spreading out of the reservations, it almost becomes like Southwest, where you try to, you know, you sit there with your finger on the button with the alarm. Whenever my wife and I have friends coming in town, hey, we know 2 weeks out on the dot at 10 a.m., we got to hit this to be able to get into that sushi restaurant. And so it becomes almost a badge of honor when you say, hey, I got that reservation, right? It's a hot one. Can you tell us a little about what the differences really are on these reservation platforms?
You know, there are a little bit of nuances. Some will maybe gather more spending data. So if you're, and I won't go into each one of what they do, but some will be able to say, you know, Wayne likes to travel and he likes an old fashioned when he sits down, right? And this is the type of vodka he likes, or he enjoys Italian food, right? So as you go out and you eat more through some of the platforms, they get a little more understanding of you. There's also, you know, it's been shown that certain tables drive more money. If you're sitting with a window view and you're a couple eating there, you're more likely to get a slightly nicer bottle of wine. So some of these companies and platforms are able to drive a lot more data, which they can then feed back to the, whether it's a restaurant or a hotel, a nightclub in Las Vegas. They can tell you, for those private venues, you know, what tables are driving, you know, a lot of the income that's coming in. So there have been some changes with these companies. We work with all of them. I mean, it's sometimes a consumer has a hard time between all the different sites, especially if you're having to prepay for it. And so we try to, you know, give them different choices, you know, and then, you know, keep up to date, maybe send them an email a couple of days before they're traveling to let them know, hey, you have a restaurant reservation, 8 o'clock in Chicago. Is that timing still good? And the platforms have actually done a good job as well, letting you know, hit 1 or 9 if you're yes or Y if you're able to make the reservation tomorrow. Because the good news is if it's no, you can then get out and they can, you know, get that, secure that table with somebody else.
Yeah, I've noticed that over the last couple of years especially, and it's been huge because a lot of times with the way, especially here in Dallas, and some magazines and websites have written articles about this like arms race for reservations, and they're so difficult. Well,
I want to use your Southwest analogy. I don't want to let that one go because, you know, when you try to get an A seating with 24 hours to go, if you don't go on, if you don't set it up 24 hours, the A seats go, right? And so then you're C60.
Yeah.
You're not going to get a bag in the overhead. You're going to be in the middle row. It's similar with some of these restaurants. When they open up their reservations for 60 days out, well, midnight at that time period, everybody's online. They wake up, they set their alarms at home, and they wake up and they get that reservation to get that coveted. It's like Willy Wonka and the gold ticket. And that's one of the things we also do at Aspire is if we're working through a credit card company and a member calls up on the back of the credit card around a restaurant reservation and they say, I want to go to, I'll use French Laundry since you brought that up earlier, and their books open up 60 days in advance, we actually have, because we're 24/7, so somebody's actually calling on behalf of that card member to call the restaurant reservation. So it really helps with people's times to in planning that we can do that for them.
Yeah, it's difficult. I find myself wind up. I make reservations on spec that I just say, hey, we're going to be doing something. We've got friends in Dallas. I got to go ahead and grab this one just in case I don't get another one. And then, like you mentioned, that one, you know, 1-9. Text has been huge because a lot of times I forget. I've got 4 different platforms I'm juggling and I'm not showing up somewhere that I don't have a reservation. So it's great all around. I know it helps the restaurants too, because I always feel bad if I have a couple and I forget to cancel it a week out or something like that. It's a real tough world here.
It is.
Before I let you go, one thing I always like doing is a little Mount Rushmore segment. And for you, I wanted to talk about the 4 greatest food cities for your Mount Rushmore. I won't make you choose any specific restaurants in there because I know you guys want to be maintain your neutrality for the rankings and everything. But for the listeners, nobody better than you, who is on your Mount Rushmore for food cities?
So you are asking me from my personal standpoint, not from bookings that I see within the company. This is a
personal. You're personal. This is all you.
So, well, I'll say from a booking, you know, I'll start with Europe. Europe, Paris is still the probably the best dining destination, most bookings that we see coming from people. And this is from people traveling from the U.S. going to Europe. Me personally, and you talked about it earlier, I love Barcelona. I love the, you know, just the atmosphere there, the restaurants that are there. The number 2 restaurant in the world, Desfrutar, is there. So it's a tremendous place. And even as you go up the coast of Spain, there's so many choices for foodies and restaurants that's a great area. In the U.S., I'm from the New York area, even though I live in Nashville now. I think, you know, it's tough competition between New York City, Miami, New Orleans are all great restaurants that we're seeing, you know, exponential growth, a lot of restaurants opening up. If I was going away for a weekend of just of dining, I can get into different restaurants. New York would probably be my first choice. Mexico City, if going south, between San Paulo and Mexico City, I'd probably choose Mexico City. They probably have four restaurants in the top 50 right now. And then in Asia, you know, I've been to Tokyo a lot and love the restaurant scene in Tokyo. So those would be my four choices. I'll sit with those. I'll go Barcelona, New York, Mexico City, and Tokyo.
All good. All pretty safe. Yeah, I know Mexico City's been on fire. Seems like everybody's been going there, and it's been in the news a lot and a hot travel destination, which is great. It's always fun seeing different cities emerge and different types of food take center stage. This has been awesome. I could keep you here for hours and hours and hours, but I won't. We'll have you on again down the road whenever something new comes out, or in the summer, maybe after Vegas, to break down everything that happened there, the 50 best. But where can people find you? Get your plugs in if people want to get in touch with you.
So we actually we're opening up a B2C shortly. Right now it would be mostly through your credit card company. So you know, I'm Wayne.Conti at AspireLifestyles.com. People can certainly reach out to me. In fact, AJ, if you're traveling to Europe, I know you got young ones, but when you're ready to travel again, we're ready to help you out.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, mostly through most people on that are listening to this podcast now are probably using our services if they're calling the back of the credit card. So my recommendation would be to reach out to your local bank. If they're not using Aspire Lifestyles, they should say, well, you should reach out to Aspire and talk to them about setting up a program, because we are, you know, again, we're doing about 3 million restaurant reservations and bookings for hotels and airlines. And so we're connected with most of the restaurants around the world through our staff. And so we're happy to help people as they're planning their travel and getting to where they want to go and getting them into the restaurants of their choice. But I just want to say thank you. I've listened to your podcast the past. Congrats on this, and best of luck with what you're doing. You're providing some great information out there for people, and love being a part of your show today.
It's a lot of fun. Like I said, we'll definitely have you on periodically for sure, because this is something that everybody loves talking about, everybody loves hearing about, and everybody loves the inner workings of it. We'll take us after the 50 best. I'd love to do a deep dive on everything that actually goes into that and on how that all comes together and talk through, you know, what the emerging trends are going to be for the rest of this year and into the future. So thank you so much for coming on. Appreciate it. Everybody's going to love this. And I think it's safe to say now that Chrono is experiential travel. Thanks, man.
Take care. Thank you.